Good morning, everyone. I'm here with Takeaway contributor and Essence senior editor Patrick Henry Bass.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here. How's your Dickens these days?
Pretty good.
You got a literary suggestion for getting through these tough times or even thinking about it? You know, actually, it's hard to have any detachment about what's going on because we're right in it right now.
Yeah, I was thinking it was the best of times, the worst of times, and somewhere in between.
That's Dickens for Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Sometimes the cliche, though, hits the mark, don't you think?
Please, sir, I want some more.
What?
Please, sir, I want some more.
More?
Of course, for years, Hollywood has been making musical fun out of the miseries of 18th century England. And of course, Charles Dickens himself, the author, made a fortune from writing about his own personal misfortunes in that terrible time of Victorian and industrial revolutionary England. Joining us now is Dr. Robert Douglas Fairhurst. He's a professor of English at the University of Oxford and joins us to discuss whether Dickens is a pretty good window to take a look at the own economic troubles that we are going through. Dr. Robert Douglas Fairhurst, thanks for joining us.
Very good to be here.
It's great to have you on because when I knew you were going to be on the program, it occasioned me going over to my bookshelf and taking down all of my favorite Dickens and really going through what I found to be a treasure trove of references and scenes. And first of all, what are some of your favorite Dickens books which really perhaps bear relevance to what's going on today?
Well, I suppose one of the good things about Dickens is that he contains so much. There's a whole imaginative world there, which is like the one we live in, but also weirdly at odds with it. And that means that you can pick up almost anything that he writes, and you'll find something in it that has relevance today. So, for instance, the idea of poverty as bearing a kind of social stigma. Betty Higden, a character in Our Mutual Friend, springs to mind there. She prefers to go and die rather than go to the workhouse.
Can I give you a quote from there? This is from Our Mutual Friend. Pa, think how terrible the fascination of money is. I see this and hate this and dread this and don't know but that money might make a much worse change in me, and yet I have money always in my thoughts and my desires, and the whole life I place before myself is money, 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 and what money can make of life.
I mean, that could be Dickens talking about himself as well.
Indeed.
I mean, this is a man who left £93,000 when he died, so comfortably a millionaire in Victorian money. And when he wrote Scrooge, in some ways, in some of his letters, he said that it was a self-parody. The difference, I suppose, is that his fascination with money is one that allowed him to do good with it. He recognised that money is good for nothing unless you recognise that it can do more than simply buy stuff in the shops. And I suppose the idea of value is one that he comes back to again and again. Again, this seems to be a sort of fascination for him. What should you value? And in fact, is it possible to value money too much? And that's, of course, one of the stories behind Our Mutual Friend.
And one of the stories behind the financial crisis right now. You value money too much, and it becomes worthless. Talk about Little Dorrit, the story about really perhaps the most autobiographical scene of Dickens' young life, and that is when his family was actually in a debtor's prison in England.
That's right.
And he had to work to support them.
That's right. Now, his father, John Dickens, was slightly feckless when it came to money, and he was imprisoned in the Marshalsea for 14 weeks. And he was released under the what was then the Insolvent Debtors Act. But in the meantime, young Dickens, Charles Dickens, was working in a blacking warehouse, sticking labels on bottles. And he thought that it had broken his heart. He thought that it had reduced him from the status of a gentleman to just what he called a common labouring drudge. And you do get very strange echoes of that in Little Dorrit, where Little Dorrit, the heroine, is grown up, but she's very, very small. She's weirdly worldly, but she's also extremely innocent. And it's like a strange hybrid of Dickens's child self and his adult self coming into contact on the page.
Well, it's deeply psychological because Little Dorrit was born in the Marshalsea and has a kind of a longing for the home of this place that is so associated with humiliation and pain. Mm. And this is sort of the way that in which Dickens kind of weaves this notion of failure financially with failure morally. And the ability to separate those two becomes the way out. And I'm wondering if we're grappling with some of those things today.
I think that's absolutely right. One of the things that Dickens tried to do in some of his early novels was to restore an old-fashioned link between money and morality. So Oliver Twist, for instance, is born, like Little Dorrit, in poverty and more or less in captivity in the workhouse. But he is showered with riches and the revelation that he is indeed a true-born gentleman at the end of the novel. So there seems to be some kind of reward for virtue, as if he was a character in a fairy tale. Little Dorrit is interesting, though, because, as you say, the house is the prison and the prison is the home. And it's one of the many times in Dickens where homes are shown to be peculiarly vulnerable places. They're precious, but they're also deeply precarious places. And the novels are full of houses which, well, they either fall down, like Mrs. Clennam's house in Little Dorrit, or like Wemmick's house in Great Expectations.
Sure.
They seem ready to collapse at any moment. And of course, the novels are full of homeless characters, often children. Like Little Nell, the old curiosity shop, Oliver Twist, Joe in Bleak House, children who have been abandoned by society and left to roam the streets, exactly as Dickens himself thought that he was going to.
This is Patrick Henry Bass here. You just brought up the Bleak House, and talk about some of the complications of the money with the orphan in the Bleak House. I was thinking about that when, you know, with the $700 billion bailout, you know, will ordinary people ever see that money? I'm struck by that in the orphans there in Bleak House.
I mean, money for Dickens, I mean, throughout his career is complex, and it allows him to write these incredibly complex plots in which we get lost along with the characters. But at the same time, Bleak House is a very good example. He offers us a sort of bird's eye view. He shows us what it's like to see the world in a way that ordinary people don't see it, and to escape from it. So you're absolutely right that the plot of Bleak House and the financial machinations and the complexities and the tangle of red tape that snarls up people's lives is absolutely extraordinarily produced on the page. The difference is, I suppose, that there is a way out in a plot, in a novel, as there might not be for real people.
Well, Professor Fairhurst, you know, put aside Dickens' skill as a writer, his ability to create a cliffhanger, because he did write serialized, you know, weekly installments, so he had to have a certain amount of skill as a writer. But just in terms of this material, why did it hit such a chord? Why is it so timeless, these novels of misery and failure?
Yeah, I mean, it smacks of what Ezra Pound said when he pointed out that good literature is news that stays news. I mean, in 1825, when Dickens was a teenager, the Bank of England almost failed.
Right.
It had advanced too much money, too cheaply, to too many businesses who were speculating.
There we go. Another episode. Professor, can we just fly you over here and have you be on the show every week? Thanks so much. Dr. Robert Douglas Fairhurst is a fellow and tutor at Magdalen College in Oxford, talking about Dickens' News That Stays News. Patrick, top that.
I can't.